Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hey, what's up, New York City? This is Amy Wilson. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute live from the new WBAI studios. We are a socialist radio show and podcast from members of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. The Democratic Socialists of America is the largest socialist organization in the United States with 56,000 members nationwide. NYCDSA is its biggest chapter. We are run by our 5,500 plus members and organizers who are working together to build democratic socialism in all five boroughs. I'm an organizer with the DSA of North Brooklyn, and I use she, her pronouns. On today's show, let's seize the MTA. New Yorkers have come to accept that our commutes are long, expensive, annoying, unreliable, uncomfortable, and or dangerous for people of color and young people. We deserve better. Today, I'll be speaking with my comrades from the Transit Justice Committee of the Eco-Socialist Working Group, who are currently envisioning a more just, accessible, and sustainable future of transit in New York City. We'll hear about their new platform and discuss each of its demands in light of our socialist perspective. If you're a worker, rider, car commuter, or someone who's just plain fed up with the daily grind of commuting in the United States' largest city, we need you to join us in this fight for an MTA that works for us. And first, the headlines with Simone Norman.
In an addendum to last year's package of rent regulation bills, New York effectively banned the practice of making tenants pay broker's fees. The real estate industry is up in arms over the rule change, vowing legal action. State Senator Julia Salazar's good cause eviction bill was amended to allow for 3% rent increases instead of its original 1.5% amidst a new push to pass the legislation that includes support from Rep. Nydia Velazquez and DC 37. State Senator Zelnor Myrie is drafting the Tenant Opportunity to Purchase Act, which would give tenants priority to purchase their building and convert it into a limited equity cooperative should a landlord choose to sell the property. Amid a youth homelessness crisis, the city has gradually increased its shelter capacity for young people between 16 and 20 years old. However, advocates and Council Speaker Johnson say there is more the city can do to help young people find shelter and access permanent housing. DHS has retaliated against New York State for the passage of the Green Light Bill, which allows undocumented people to get driver's licenses, by forbidding New York State residents from applying to trusted traveler programs. After two police officers were shot in the Bronx, the Sergeants Benevolent Association tweeted that the NYPD was, quote, declaring war on Mayor de Blasio. The mayor's Office of Contract Services launched a new update to its contracting system, which will allow the public to access information about contracts and vendors, both online and at an updated in-person terminal at MOCS headquarters. In election news, Democratic State Senator Andrew Gonardes of District 22 in South Brooklyn will face Republican District Leader Liam McCabe in the general election this year. Gonardes narrowly defeated longtime incumbent Republican Marty Golden in the 2018 election, and McCabe intends to lean heavily on the recently enacted bail reform in his campaign. And finally, Gothamist profiled Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams' political career after he made controversial statements several times over the past month ahead of a 2021 mayoral race.
Thank you so much, Simone. Our headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by NYCDSA's Electoral Working Group. It covers local politics and radical activism. Subscribe at thethorn.nyc. So now I'd like to welcome to our WBAI studios my guests for today from the Transit Justice Committee of Eco-Socialists. Hello, how are you doing today?
Hi, good.
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good, thanks. So why doesn't each of you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what brought you to DSA, and to the organizing that you've been involved with.
My name is Darren Goldner. I use the he, him pronouns. I'm a lifetime eco-socialist. In fact, I grew up listening to WBAI, and this is the 21st anniversary of a particular event, the assassination, the killing of Amadou Diallo, thought that's relevant for our conversation later. I was active then, and I'm still active now. But what really brought me into DSA was this last summer, working on helping out on the Tiffany Caban campaign, and then becoming more engaged and becoming nearly full time contributor to our eco-socialist working group.
Wonderful. Thank you for being here, Darren.
My name is Nicole Murray. I use she, her pronouns. I'm somewhat new to DSA. I've joined about a year ago. And I didn't really have a moment of transition into becoming a socialist, but I think just being a lifelong environmentalist, I slowly realized that it's not our individual choices that really make a difference. It's the power structures that we live in, and those are what need to change if we don't want to, you know, fry on this planet. So I joined DSA to shape policy and politics towards a more socialist perspective rather than like a neoliberal perspective.
Wonderful. Well, so we have Nicole and Darren here representing a committee that's housed within our eco-socialist working group here in New York City DSA. So tell us a little bit about that Transit Justice Committee. And if you would, talk a little bit about how that work fits into DSA's larger project to build socialist power here in New York City.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're specifically focused on mobility within the city of New York. And as socialists, what we want to do is shift policy and infrastructure towards more sustainable options like walking, biking, buses, subway, things like that, and away from fossil fuel structures like cars, highways. We want to get butts out of cars and into these other modes. Mm-hmm. But what makes us socialists is that we don't want to do it necessarily with just punitive programs like fees for using certain services, like programs that are subsidized by other workers. We want to actually take power away from the structures that be, from Wall Street, from wealthy people who, you know, live in their towers and don't see what's going on below them. So we want to shift that power from the powerful to workers and to the people who get around day to day just to go to work and just live their daily lives. And specifically with labor, we really want to work closely with labor organizations to help build confidence in them that they know the system better than guys up in Albany who run the MTA. We believe that they are best positioned to make changes within the system, and that riders and commuters or pedestrians even are best suited to express their needs as commuters.
Do you have anything that you'd like to add to that, Derek?
No, I think that sums up our platform, our group goal.
Great. And the platform is exactly what we're going towards. So this is a new set of new set of demands that we're going to speak about each of them in a little bit more detail, connecting each of them to, again, this larger work that DSA is doing. Our project to build working class power in concert with our allies across the city in this larger movement. But before we get to breaking down the platform in that level of depth, could you tell me a little bit about how the platform was created and how it relates to, yeah, just tell me a little bit about how it came about.
Absolutely. So to be clear, our long-term goal is a fully democratized system. But it makes sense to start with the injustices we're seeing now. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have cops that are terrorizing people of color, young people, and other communities. And to be clear, they're there to protect profits and property and not to provide safety, not to provide outreach, not to even protect the riders or the workers. And we want to ensure that this injustice doesn't go on, that we build from it and rise up in solidarity with all of the affected communities. That's not just the people of color and young people. That's all of us. We're paying for it, and we want to make sure that what we're paying for is a system that works for the people and is run by the people who know it best, the riders and the transit workers.
Yeah, I just would add that it's not the rider's fault that the system is broken. You know, people like to blame fare beaters, or they like to blame a little bit of graffiti here and there, right. But that's not really what's making the system run so poorly.
Right. Yeah. And I had a recent experience that really brought this home to me. I was participating in the J31 action. That was a very high profile action. I was there as an individual in solidarity with the demands of its organizers. And we were in Grand Central and we were doing a little picket, just a little mm-hmm. picket in Grand Central, chanting public transit should be free. And you look up and all around the balcony of Grand Central were police looking down at us. And so looking at the contrast between the demand, mm-hmm. free transit, and the response that gets from the levers of power, mm-hmm. to me really, really brings home exactly what's at stake here.
Mm-hmm. Right. You see this intense militarization, and it really gets us more towards a fascist state. Every other day, there's a new video on social media about someone being bullied by these cops. Like the other day, a young person of color was physically shoved out of a train station, right. because she'd followed other people through an open door. She just followed a group of people in, and the cop bullied her out. And really, that's not acceptable. Like, the police are supposed to be our public servants who protect our safety, not endangering and bullying us.
Right, and they're not. They're protecting the interests of capital.
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
very, very clear. And, I mean, there's also this, what goes along with this movement is what goes along with those incidents is the movement behind them, is what I'm trying to say, is that people are taking these videos, people are posting these videos, sharing these videos. There's a real momentum mm-hmm. behind calling attention to the abuses that are happening mm-hmm. every day in our transit system.
Yeah.
And so that's why this organizing, I think, comes at a really strategic time. And I'm really excited to be here with you and break down each of those demands in your platform. Mm-hmm. So if you're just tuning in, this is Revolutions Per Minute. We are the weekly radio show of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America, and we are on listener-sponsored WBAI. We're broadcasting at 99.5 FM, and the show will also be streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com. You can also find us on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com, or on Twitter at NYCRPM. So today we're talking about transit justice with our eco-socialist working group of New York City DSA. And for the next few minutes, what we're going to do is we're going to speak in depth about each of the demands that are encompassed within this platform for transit justice. Okay, so first up, we have it prioritizes transit rights over Wall Street profits and political favors. And I'm going to read everything twice.
Yeah.
So I really want everybody to catch every single word of this incredibly important. Okay, so prioritizing transit rights over Wall Street profits and political favors. So let's speak on that. What is the role of Wall Street and what is the role of Governor Cuomo? Boo. in all of this.
Yeah, so let's be really clear that it's Cuomo and it's Wall Street who controls the subway. Okay, it's not riders, it's not even the workers, they just operate it. We need to make the connection to people that, all the problems that you're seeing, all the difficulties that you have are really because of what's going on at the top, what mm-hmm. the richest 1% are doing with the MTA. So basically, so much of our funding comes from bonds, and a lot of city services like NYPA, they issue bonds, but the MTA has issued so much debt in the form of bonds that we're still paying it back, the interest. We're not even touching some of the principal on these bonds. So the comptroller determined that basically, more or less currently, about 30% of all fare revenue goes to paying back bonds. Who owns these bonds? It's Wells Fargo, it's Chase Bank, it's Evercore Wealth, it's institutional lenders. Like, you and I can't buy a bond to invest in the system. It's all these institutional lenders. Imagine that every time you swipe, 80 cents of your swipe goes back to make somebody richer.
Right.
That's absurd.
That makes me really angry.
Yeah, it makes us angry too. Yeah. So this is the message that we're trying to communicate to people that, you know, it's not because you skipped 275 or that because there was some graffiti on the subway. It was because, you know, when you swipe, your money is not going back into the system to make it better. It's not going into, you know, largely into salaries or anything like that. It's going into Wall Street. This is how they control the MTA. This is why the cops are, there's, you know, Cuomo wants 500 more cops to protect fares, to, you know, make sure that he can send this money back, so we can just keep making Wall Street richer. By the way, the guy who sold the first bond package back in 20 years ago, Bob Foran, he is now the chairman of finance of the MTA. Mm. So, yeah.
Right.
This is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with crony capitalism, and that's not how a transit system should work. It should not be profiting off of us. It should just be a system that works for us, by us, period.
Not only is it crony capitalism, but it's a system that's currently unchecked crony capitalism. So Wall Street and Cuomo are selling the MTA deeper and deeper into debt. So that 30% number is just going up. So more than 30% of fares every year will keep going to paying back debt. And right now, because they're happy with that, because Wall Street profits from it and Cuomo doesn't face any consequences, they're happy to keep doing that. And that means the MTA is getting into a worse and worse debt position. And they're, you know, that if they were a private company or a person, you'd be thinking that there's no way they can get out of this. And what we want to do is actually take that back and not allow them to just take our public system and use it for their own personal profit.
Right. So if I understand you correctly, then, so if we do see a fare hike, that mm-hmm. money is not going, is going to line pockets, right? It's going mm-hmm. to pay off this debt.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So what Comptroller Stringer said was in 2022, I think it'll be 36%. And if the fare goes up, it'll be about a dollar of your swipe. If you think about it that way, going towards paying back interest on bonds.
Right, exactly. And, you know, it's not to say that there aren't any... Yeah, I think that people, I don't want to speak for the entirety of New York City commuters, but I think people would be okay with it if they knew that their money was going toward actual material improvements. Mm-hmm. Because we all know, we've all been in trains that are janky and we've all been in stations that are dirty and et cetera. But the money that you're spending as a rider is not actually going to address any of those real
right.
problems.
Yeah. I mean, not some of it. Potentially does, but not, yeah, a lot of it doesn't. And as a rider, you know, what you see is you see the, you know, dirty floors, a dirty car, you see the conductor who's just like maybe making, you know, announcements that you can't hear. So it's quick to blame, like, oh, it's the workers, it's the, you know, it's these guys, when it's not. It's people who are in Albany, people who are living, you know, who knows where, and they just are lining their pockets with our money.
Right. And this, the system is so deeply broken. I think it's really easy to start pointing fingers and mm-hmm. assigning blame, but
it's Cuomo.
Right. Well, there you go. It's important to be clear about, you know, where the blame actually lies. And it then your platform makes that very explicit. So moving on to the next plank, it is delivers fare free and carbon neutral multimodal services. Delivers fare free and carbon neutral multimodal services. So let's break that down a little bit. When we talk about transportation justice or transportation reform, carbon emissions and carbon neutrality are often at the forefront of that conversation. But in the way you formulate it, fare free, as in free at the point of service for the user, is equally important. So speak a little bit more, if you will, on that.
Like New York, where even so much of our mass transit, so much of our transportation is mass transit, we're still contributing about 30% of all of our greenhouse gas emissions from transportation. Mm. And whatever we can do to encourage more has a disproportionate impact on reducing those emissions and really saving our climate. But beyond that, just thinking about it in terms of linking fare, the choices that we make with our public investments, our tax dollars. Right now, we choose infrastructure. You don't pay at the every time you get on a road to drive. You want to take the subway, and that's not fair. Like we want to incentivize all of the systems that allow us to have just an equitable and sustainable transit. And not necessarily subsidize the fossil fuel infrastructure throughout our city.
Third of four planks, this envisions a world where we're committing fully to transparency, and accountability while being led by the people who know it best, New York City riders and transit workers. So what are New York City riders and transit workers? And very interesting that that's connected, coupled like that. That's a big part of what you're putting forward. Tell me a little bit more about what you're actually envisioning in terms of structure when we're looking at something that's led by the people, not by Wall Street and Cuomo, as we talked about on the first plank.
Right. So so this is a great opportunity to really separate again that transit workers from the system. Mm-hmm. They don't currently have the voices to change the system. And from talking to transit workers, we understand that they want to make things better. They have ideas to make things better. They want to do good jobs and provide a good how hard that must be to go to work every day, knowing that the system you work in is broken, and it's broken because of these corrupt profiteering interests.
Right.
And yet they still do it. They still try to do the best job they possibly can. They try, like, people work through their lunch, conductors and operators work through their lunch breaks because there have been service cuts. We want to make sure that their voices are heard. They actually know how the system operates and how it can be improved. And people in Albany don't. We unfortunately an MTA control structure that's been created to remove accountability for the governor, for the mayor. And we want to change that. We want a democratically elected leadership structure. We don't have the full map of that yet, but that empowers the people who know it best to really make the most decisions.
Yeah, currently on the board, there is some labor representation, but they're non-voting.
Mm.
So they can't influence any decisions. So the board right now, I think I might be wrong about this, I think there's one person of color and she left. Not any representation of the people who are actually like writing and the people who are working the system. I think I read in the news they are trying to get somebody who they're like, oh, look, somebody who's in a wheelchair now is part of the like upper structure. But that should be built into the system as
right.
it is.
Right.
We have such a diverse city and that we all need to use transit in one way, shape or form. And a lot of us are excluded from it because their needs aren't met. Like, barely any stations have elevator, you know, dirty or broken escalators, but they don't, their voices aren't heard and they can't, there's no way for them. All they can do is what? Nothing. I don't know.
Well, and then you think about what else you're opting out of, you know, mm-hmm. you're opting out of your right to the city,
right?
Right. Your mm-hmm. right to experience everything that the city has to offer, to live a full life,
yeah.
to live a life with meaning and dignity.
Yeah. I mean, it's really great in New York compared to a lot of other North American cities that we do have some system. I grew up near Atlanta. We just don't have anything close to what we have in New York. So this opportunity is there to make this a really amazing that works for the people who need it. We just need to change the way the power structure works, and that's it. And then we can make that happen. It's the
that's a good line. And I think it's also, yeah, it is worth remembering that, you know, when we are working toward this vision where we're working within the specific parameters of, mm-hmm. of New York City and what exists here. I think it's so interesting that there's labor representation on the board, but it's non-voting.
Yeah.
It's like the perfect...
So they can just shout into the void, basically.
Well, I know what that feels like.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love that you are focusing on the Worker-Rider Alliance from the side now of the rider, because a few months ago we were able to have an in-depth interview with some of our comrades in DSA Labor Branch who are in the Fight Back Coalition of TWU Local 100, and they spoke about it mm-hmm. from their perspective as well. And I know that you've been working with them and with others in TWU as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to keep that relationship going. We think it'll be really powerful.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's not possible without it.
No. Mm-hmm.
So finally, the fourth of these four kind of headline planks that we have is something that you started to allude to a little bit there, Nicole, is the intersection with racial justice, with accessibility, with housing justice, some of these other kind of working areas. So the text reads, this platform would repair the injustices past and present disproportionately borne by Black, Brown, and Indigenous communities. So let's dig a little bit into that. What's the racial justice element, and how does this kind of fit with the whole story of the capitalist development of New York City?
So the subways were an interesting creation. They were built to allow workers to come into Manhattan to sell their labor to capitalist interests from other boroughs and from other parts of Manhattan. They were built by private profits from those workers as they were commuting in. they haven't changed in the 100-plus years since then. Mm-hmm. Exact the same purpose. They extract profit from people who have to commute for work, and they don't really allow mobility beyond those original designs of getting people into the central Manhattan business. We don't think that's fair. We think that people should have the ability to get around wherever they need to go, whether or not they're selling their labor in Manhattan. We want to ensure that we eliminate some of these gaps where we have lower service, inaccessible areas, and where we see the most pedestrian deaths, the most cyclist deaths, the highest rates of asthma because we have more motor vehicles. Mm-hmm. We also tend to have the bus depots located in communities of color, And really, the system is longer a fully democratic movement of individuals.
Yeah, I don't think it's any coincidence that the areas with some of the highest transit density is the financial district. Mm. I mean, when you think about it.
It's clearly not a coincidence. Yeah.
Speculating.
Yeah.
When it comes to, the transit shouldn't just be for getting to and from work. People should be able to engage in civic life. That's on a bus, that's biking, that's walking. When we think about transit deserts, there's different definitions, but for me, a transit desert is anywhere stop or a subway stop or a nice wide sidewalk, within a couple blocks, which is a huge part of our city and a huge part of especially the other boroughs outside of Manhattan. We focus a lot on Manhattan, especially in terms of like getting cars out. Mm-hmm. Like Darren was saying, in some of those other boroughs, this is where we see the most deaths of people who are just, minding their own business, standing on a corner and get run over by cars because we have, five-lane roads, Robert Moses legacies. Don't get me started.
Or other show on Robert Moses.
Yeah, but, highways have destroyed communities, and the South Bronx was just ripped in half by the Crossbox Expressway.
Right.
And the BQE. This structure needs to change, and it needs to not be just about moving goods and moving capital. It needs to be about how can communities, thrive and interact with each other in a more just way.
Yeah, in New York, we've come to accept that commuting takes your time and your money, mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of time. One of the areas that really encouraged me to get back into transit justice was about when I was canvassing for Tiffany Caban in Eastern Queens. And there were such broad swaths of inaccessible transit that people would take car services, they would take these dollar vans, they would take means that meant they still had an hour and a half, 2 hour commute to get to where they needed to go, and they just accept it. And generally, these are like the workers, not the ultra rich. The people who live in these areas are working class people, and they pay the highest cost in time and money.
Right.
There's a really brilliant socialist case right now in Paris, where the mayor of Paris is running for re-election on a platform of the 15-minute quarter, and that's that you should be able to get to everything that you need to your work, your family life, anything you need within 15 minutes on mass transit, on your feet, on an accessible mode, and that's brilliant. Like we believe that everyone should have that in every city, in the wealthiest city in the wealthiest country on earth. We should have that too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's expensive to be poor, right?
Yeah.
That's something that's just true across no matter what you're talking about. I think the time cost is really essential to discuss here. There's that old slogan, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for sleep, 8 hours for what you will. And I always think about, well, whoever came up with that was not commuting because you don't have 8 hours for what you will. Like once you get there and get back, you have more like too. And that's from my experience.
Yeah, and let's not forget the environmental costs too, and the health costs, and the asthma, the just poor air quality, no tree cover, worse educational outcomes, the closer that you live to car infrastructure. Those are really important too.
Right, and the historic destruction and disruption of these communities that have been displaced or just bisected by development.
And then never mind, like, you know, I think BJ's wants to build a parking lot over wetlands in some emergency. Like, have we not learned our lesson from Sandy that, you know, we need more of this, we need physical, like, natural wetlands and, you know, things to absorb our, you know, hurricanes. But, you know, parking lots come before that. It's a ravaging of the land.
Well, you make a great point, which is that there's no time to waste. These are things that are urgent. We're in a state of climate emergency, and we need to be working on them sooner rather than later. So we are going to speak a little bit about actions that people can take, ways that they can stay involved with your campaign, get updates from your campaign. And we are going to open the phones, as we always do here on Revolutions Per Minute. But before we do that, I have something, and this is Revolutions Per Minute, and we are the show of the Democratic Socialists of America. We broadcast weekly here on WBAI at 5 p.m., and we've been doing so for over a year. We've discussed topics that are of critical importance. We talked a lot about Tiffany Caban's campaign. We've talked about a campaign for a public bank. We talk all the time about electing our socialist slate to state and federal offices. And this weekly hour is incredibly important to us in the DSA. So we do have to ask you, if you're listening out there and you enjoy the show and you enjoy hearing every week from the minds and hearts of organizers in New York City, that if you have something to give, that you give it now and that you consider supporting WBAI. I'll read the number out. The number is 516-620-3602. Once again, that's 516-620-3602. You can also go to give2wbai.org. That's numeral two. So that's give2wbai.org. And for us here, you know, we talk and think a lot about why we're here on WBAI. And it's because it gives us this platform and this community to discuss the things that aren't being discussed, heard directly from people who aren't given voices on other platforms. One thing that I was thinking about in preparation for this show is that it was produced, actually, it was brought together by our comrade Lee Zishi, who you know if you listen to the show, who's always, she's on the climate beat all the time. She's talking about great organizing. And the reason why she can't be here today is because she's up in Albany and she's holding National Grid's feet to the fire. Since per minute, we are all organizers and the people that we speak to are all serious organizers. So we love our home on WBAI. We want to see it flourish. Its listeners. And if you're able to participate in that project with us, again, the number is 516-620-3602 or give2wbai.org. And please tell them I sent you. This is Amy Wilson from Revolutions Per Minute. So thank you for listening. And thank you to all of you who have given to WBAI and who are able to give now. So before we open the phones and talk to some of those listeners who may have something to say about our transit system, let's talk about this kind of phrase of seize the MTA, to seize the MTA and expand a little bit more on some of those actions that people can take to resist Cuomo's MTA.
Yeah, so seize the MTA, really, it just means that you don't have to accept what's been given. On our site, we have a few things that you can do to opt out of the system. So one would be evade the fare. I'm fine with it. You know, once you understand, you know, how messed up the system is, skip your 275, keep it. That's not the problem.
Evade the fare. Nicole said it was okay.
I mean, you know, I'm okay with people who evade the fare. They're not the problem. That's what I came to understand.
I think of it as a civil disobedience at this point.
It is. Yeah. It absolutely is.
Yep. Task force. These extra cops are to protect fares. It's for protecting profits for Wall Street and Cuomo.
Yep.
And that's what the fares are going to right now. So to support a fare system in while that's happening is just really a non-decision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a little note here that, you know, it's not Ryder's fault that Cuomo spent $30 million to retile a tunnel. in the state colors of MTA money.
Right.
Yeah. So keep your 275.
Yep.
So you can also, it's called a campaign called Swipe It Forward. Mm-hmm. So if you do have a card, this works really well with unlimited cards, but even if you have a regular card, swipe somebody in who may be kind of standing around waiting, or even if it just looks like somebody who may like a nice gesture, that's something you can do.
And with the swipe at force, mm-hmm. it is legal to,
oh, yeah.
to give
it's,
a swipe.
Oh, yeah.
It's completely legal. Yeah. Swipe. So I bicycle a lot, and I didn't have an unlimited Metro card before today. I've taken 3 subway rides, and I have swiped 3 times on leaving the station. You can start. It's fully legal. You can give it to whoever is waiting.
Yep. Right. So for people who may not be comfortable with the idea of straight up evading the fare, this is true. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You can also share sightings of police in the subway with it's a Twitter account called Unfair NYC, and that's FARE. They just post any sightings of police officers. So if you're worried that they might harass you, you could. And then we also would recommend people elect socialist representatives who have strong transit platforms. We have Boris Santos, who's running in Brooklyn. And we have some other people, like we have Pete Harrison, who's running, and hopefully Jerry Brisport. He's going to be putting out a transit platform soon, I think. Elect socialists who are minded like us and want to see the system change in a different way.
Right. And I'll just underscore for the listeners that Boris Santos for Assembly and Jabari Brisport for State Senate are both campaigns that have been endorsed by a few weeks ago, and I'm sure you'll be hearing more about those in the coming weeks and months. And just to go back to the subway cop sightings with Unfair NYC, I also think it's worth just following Unfair NYC and taking a look at just how often and just how many sightings there are. It really puts these in perspective, right? And I think it would be a really interesting project for somebody out there if you're in of the Unfair NYC, so people can see exactly where the policing is concentrated, where and when, and kind of.
And lastly, we have demand that your legislators support certain bills. There's a bill out now that would end the fare evasion. I'm sorry, not end fare evasion fines, but reduce it to if you get a summons. So it could be reduced to just the cost of a ride so that it's not, like if you. I also want to mention a lot of people evade fares because, like, the machine is broken. No one's around to help, and then a cop is hiding behind a pillar playing Candy Crush and he sees you. And then now you're paying $100. It's just a ride.
$100 is more than people get for a parking ticket in a dangerous area. $275 is an action that may be necessary, as Nicole mentioned. Like, someone might just not have a working MetroCard and all the machines are broken. That happens a lot.
Right.
Or someone might actually be in need. And giving them or enforcing, cracking down with a $100 punitive measure isn't going to help them in any way. It's not going to help society in any way. They're not going to magically be able to afford fares after that. So we definitely want to eliminate the penalty and eventually just eliminate the fares.
Well, it's a straight up just criminalization of poverty to charge a $100 fine for fare evasion. Mm-hmm. So this is an active bill.
Yep. Yeah, sorry, I don't have the bill number in front of me.
I think Assembly 1720, but could be wrong.
Okay, well, at the end of the show, we'll share your URL that you've set up for this project, and folks can go there and check it out. So just a moment, I do want to touch on this larger movement that we're seeing in New York City. We've seen these high-profile actions over the past few months with the demands of fare-free transit, accessibility, cops out of the MTA, and ending the harassment that's largely targeted toward communities of color. So as this Transit Justice Committee and as individuals and organizers, how do you see the work that you're doing in conversation with that larger movement?
So in general, we have the same types of goals, but we're not necessarily the same groups. We're more adjacent. We want to work with our candidates and work to change the system by agitating, by important legislation. And the other groups want to change the conversation. So we see it as more of a working adjacent to each other with some of these groups, like at FTP and J31, mm-hmm. Whereas we're not directly engaging with each other. We're alongside and complementary.
Yeah, it's really just different tactics towards very similar goals, and that's just changing the power structures within.
Exactly. And you see the way that those actions are advancing the conversation forward. Mm-hmm. There's public art campaigns to raise consciousness about Swipe It Forward and other actions that people can take. And also, I just saw this past week that it started to spread to Chicago. They have posters that people are putting up in the subway, and they say in solidarity with New York City.
Great.
So it's incredibly exciting to see this kind of catch fire and come from other transnational movements as well, like Chile last fall.
Yeah.
So we are talking about New York City and local organizing, this is a transnational movement as well. We're going to see it hopefully take off.
Yeah, people are fed up.
Yes. And I'm curious if there's anybody out there who's listening who wants to call and speak with us about it. We've got about 15 minutes left of the show. I like to keep it positive in general as an organizer, and I like to imagine and be generative and envision something different than what we currently have, rather than focusing on the ills, because it's fun. So our question for today is: how would your life be different if transit were free and accessible? Oh, and how can you call in? 212-209-2877. Once again, that's 212-209-2877. How would your life be different if transit were free and accessible? Anybody? Nobody? Nobody has it. How would your life be different, Nicole and Darren?
So getting to Queens to Canvas would not have taken me an hour and a half. And then canvassing in Queens would have been not just less arduous, but much, much safer. All of the roads in Queens are designed to move cars along at the fastest velocity to have the most cars, and not necessarily to have people and pedestrians around safely. I've never felt as much of a target as I was trying to get door to door in some of these neighborhoods.
Great. So I think we do have some callers on the line. Let's go to our first caller. Hi, you're on with Revolutions Per Minute. Who am I speaking to?
My name's Eric from Williamsburg.
Hi,
Eric. I belonged to DSA before it was DSA, when it was DSOC, Democratic Socialist Organizing
Committee. Oh, my goodness.
I was on the original walkout when Harry Fleischman, who was Norman Thomas, the secretary, made the motion at the Socialist Party.
Wow.
So I have a long background, and DSA is doing much, much better than it was when I was a member in opposition. They never would have suggested people ferry vague. I have two quick things I want to say.
Sure.
Number one, I believe the ruling circles and the ruling class are using debt to oppress us. I think that is not new.
Mm-hmm.
We need to read Paul Maddox and Keynes and why the indebtedness it will never liberate the working class. Because mm-hmm. the ruling class is not trying to help and fail. They're trying to destroy us and succeeding. And we have to fight back. The second thing is a little off the subject, but I have to mention in the current issue that just came out of the London Review of Books, there's a wonderful review about Red Clydesdale in Scotland and how during the time of the First World War, they avoided the war and the organizing, much of which was done by women at the time.
Oh.
And I want to recommend it to everyone who's a better.
Well, thank you so much for calling. It's nice to speak with you, Eric, and solidarity to you. Thank you for contributing your experience and your knowledge. We appreciate that. We've got another caller on the line. Hello, you're on with Revolutions Per Minute. Who am I speaking to?
Hello?
Hi, you're on with Revolutions Per Minute.
Hi, this is Reggie. Another important thing is I actually got hit with $100 ticket, not with the subways. Actually, for me, I wouldn't actually jump a turnstile, although I also congratulated you. I also congratulate you for listing that as an option. I got hit with those express buses, with those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's actually more, in my opinion, that's actually more insidious, because I actually wasn't even hit with evading. I was hit where I got an express bus ticket. My major ride was the subway, and like I got express bus ticket in the morning, and then when I came back on the subway, the express bus was there. It's only one stop get to my whole stop. So instead of walking, I said, "Oh, the bus is right there." And like I actually, they had people waiting, not even on the bus, but at the interim stop. So when you got off, I showed them my ticket that I had for the day, but it was for the morning,
Wow.
And I paid in the morning. That is really insidious. When you actually go down there to the administrative court, I mean, it's $100. It's a $100 fare, and there's interest on it, and you can fight it. You know, you can actually, I would say if that happens, try fighting it twice, and see if you can get a pro bono or like some.
We agree with fighting it. But we want to fight it as a class. We want to fight it all together. It's hard to expect people to take time out of a work day a lot of the time to fight a $100 ticket.
Right.
Like someone might have to lose their day's labor to do that. And that's just not an option. People don't have sick days or days off. So we want to end all fare tickets. Like no $100 fines for anyone.
Yeah, and on SBS it can be insidious as well, because in our current system, after you swipe in the subway, you get on the train, your interactions with the police are over for the day, potentially, on the train. Whereas you're on a bus, they can cop on at any time. And if you misplace your ticket, and they can hassle you. I saw a video of someone who got tased over it.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and just because it's $2.75.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Reggie, for pointing out that that other aspect of it. I think we've got time for one more caller.
Hello?
Hi, you're on with Revolutions Per Minute.
Basically, give up my subcompact car, and I have a solution for the MTA's financial disarray, which is basically taxing real estate that's near subway lines, like the Second Avenue subway on the east side. All the property owners have drawn a windfall where the rents have gone up by 25% approximately. All the stores are now occupied.
Mm-hmm.
So basically any property, and no one wants to do this, but it's very obvious that the people who own property by the key subway lines and subway stations, they get higher rents.
Yep.
And they should pay for the actual benefit to their property.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they could solve the problem very easily. The people who benefit mostly from the Second Avenue subway, which is, $1 billion, is the main people who are reaping the rewards are the property owners, the condo owners, the real estate, all the commercial space. It's booming there. And they're paying, and it's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
People who own property by the subway lines and subway stations should pay much more than if you live 20, 30 blocks away.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got Nicole giving the thumbs up.
It's land value tax, basically. Different real estate taxes. You probably know more about this than I do.
Right. So right now you can think of a fare and even a lot of other usage fees as consumption taxes, and they are inherently regressive. Everyone pays the same rate, and particularly the people who have to use the system pay disproportionately higher based on their income and their needs. Land values make a lot more sense. The wealthy landowners, the real estate investors, are the ones who really are benefiting from these multi-billion-dollar investments, these vanity projects, the Second Avenue subway, the extension of the 7 to
Hudson Yards.
These aren't benefiting the workers and the majority of New York City people. They're benefiting the
capital owning class.
Yes, exactly.
Great. Well, if that makes you mad, as it makes me mad, we are going to let Nicole and Darren tell you how you can get involved with the Transit Justice Committee and with this larger project. This has been Revolutions Per Minute. And just in case you can't get enough of our hot socialist content, we are going to have Jack Devine on again at 8 o'clock, 8 to 9, and he is going to be doing some live coverage of the New Hampshire primary results. So please keep it locked here on WBAI, the People's Radio Station of New York City. And Nicole and Darren, tell us about how we can make the subway something that serves all the people of New York City.
Yeah, so besides the things we mentioned before, if you want to join us in our advocacy and our work, we have a little microsite. It's at bit.ly/seizeTheMTA, one word, no spaces, no hyphens. You can learn more about some of the points that we brought up today, and there's also a link to sign up for our group, or you can go to socialist.nyc and look for the eco-socialist section and sign up through there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much to both of you for being here in the studio with me.
You're
incredibly knowledgeable. I'm so interested in this project that you have, and please keep in touch and give us an update as you progress. Thanks everyone for listening to Revolutions Per Minute. I'm Amy Wilson. We'll see you next week, Tuesday at 5, and we're going toward a socialist future one day at a time. So see you then.